Simon could see his age now, not in his face, but behind his eyes. They were dark mirrors that reflected the passage of uncounted years.
Had something gone wrong, you would have been with the Silent Brothers within the hour. I may not be a Silent Brother anymore, but I have previously treated those who've consumed the waters. Magnus prepared the tea because he's worked with both of your minds. Katerina, of course, is a nurse. You were always safe. I am sorry. None of us wanted to deceive you. This was done for your benefit.
Not an explanation, Simon said. I want to see Clary. I want to know what's going on.
She's fine, Katerina said. I'll go check on how they're doing. Don't worry.
She left, and Jem leaned forward in his chair.
Before Clary comes in, I need to know, what did you see?
When you drugged me?
Simon, this is important. What did you see?
I was in New York. I thought I was in New York. Did we go to New York? Did you open a portal?
Jem shook his head. You were in this room the entire time. Please, tell me.
Clary and I were in Central Park by the Bethesda Fountain. The angel in the fountain flew away, and the fountain flooded. Clary disappeared. Then some boat came, and I was on a tunnel of love ride with Jace, and he kept telling me to remember where we met, even though I didn't see him.
Stop a moment, Jem said. What does that mean to you?
I have no idea. I just know he was saying that I had to remember.
Do you remember?
No, Simon snapped. I barely remember anything. I know I was probably with Clary. Clary could see him.
Go on, Jem said.
What happened then?
I saw Maya, he said.
And I saw Jordan. He was covered in blood. Then this ride dumped me out on the East River, and some kid named Marine said she died because of me and jumped in. Clary was floating on the water, and I...
He shuddered again, and Jem immediately stood and produced a blanket, wrapping it round his shoulders.
Move closer to the fire, Jem said, guiding him up and to a chair. When Simon had settled a bit and warmed, Jem encouraged him to continue.
Marine told me I had to decide which one of them to save. Jace showed up again and gave me some lecture about how all the choices were hard. I jumped in.
Who did you decide to save? Jem asked.
I hadn't decided anything. I knew I had to jump. And I guess I knew Maureen was dead. She said she was dead. But Clary wasn't. I just had to get to Clary. I got all of this energy all of a sudden, and I could swim to her. And when I swam to her, I looked up, and she was swimming to me.
Jem sat back and tented his fingers together for a moment.
I want to see Clary, Simon said through chattering teeth.
His body was warm. It had probably never been cold, really, but the river water still felt so real.
Katerina reappeared a moment later with Clary, who was also wrapped in a blanket. Jem immediately got up and offered her his chair. Clary's eyes were wide and shining, and she looked to Simon in relief.
Did it happen to you, too? She said. Whatever that was.
I think we both got it, he replied. You okay?
I'm fine. I'm just really cold. I thought I was in the river.
Simon stopped shivering.
You thought you were in the river?
I was trying to swim to you, Clary said. We were in Central Park, and you got sucked into the ground like you were being buried alive. And Raphael came, and I was on his motorcycle, and we were flying over the river, and I saw you. I jumped off.
From behind Clary's chair, Katerina nodded.
I saw something kind of like that, Simon said. Not exactly, but enough.
And I reached you.
You were swimming to me, and we were back
in Central Park, by the fountain with the angel.
Magnus had joined the group as well and stretched himself out on a sofa.
Bethesda Fountain, he said. Shadow Hunters may have had something to do with building it. I'm just saying.
What does this all mean? Simon asked. What was this about?
The two of you are different, Magnus said. There are things in your background that mean that things have to be done differently. For a start, both of you have had blocks put on your memories. Clary has an unusual amount of angel blood. And you, Simon, used to be a vampire.
We know that, but why did you have to drug us to do something symbolic?
It wasn't symbolic. The Parapetai test is the test of fire, Katerina said. You stand in rings of fire to make your bond. This is the test of water. The nature of the test requires that you have no knowledge of the test. Mentally preparing for the test can affect the outcome. This test wasn't about Julian and Emma. It's about the two of you. Think about what you saw, what you both learned. Think about what you felt. Think about when you were both able to swim to each other, when you had nothing left, when you should have died.
Simon and Clary stared at each other. The fog began to lift.
You took the water, Jem said, and you joined in the same place in your minds. You were able to find each other. You were linked.
And it came to pass that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul.
Parapetai? Simon said.
Wait. Are you trying to tell me this is about being Parapetai?
I can't have a Parapetai. I turned 19 2 months ago.
Not exactly, Magnus said.
What do you mean, not exactly?
Simon, Magnus said plainly, you died. You were dead for nearly half a year. You may have been walking around, but you were not alive, not as a human. That time does not count. By Shadow Hunter standards, you are still 18. And you have the whole year until your 19th birthday to find a Parapetai. He looked towards Clary. Clary, as you know, is still within her 18th year. There should be time for you to ascend and then for you two to become Parapetai immediately, if that's what you want.
Some people are uniquely suited to being Parapetai, said Magnus. Born to it, you might say. People think it's about getting along, about always agreeing, being in sync. It's not. It's about being better together. Fighting better together. Alec and Jace haven't always agreed, but they've always been better together.
It has been spoken of often to me, Jem said in his soft voice, how much the two of you were dedicated to each other. The manner in which you have both always stood up for each other and put the other first. When a Parapetai bond is true, when the friendship runs deep and honest, it can be transcendent. There was a sadness in his eyes, a sadness so profound it was almost frightening.
We needed to find out if what had been observed about the two of you was true for your sake. You're about to witness the ceremony that can cause a powerful reaction in true Parapetai. We had to know for sure that it was true and that you could withstand it. The test told us what we needed to know.
Clary's eyes had gone very wide.
Simon, she whispered. Her voice was raspy.
It's a bit of a technicality, Magnus added. But shadow hunters have no problems with technicalities. They love a technicality. Look at Jem. Jem is a technicality in the flesh. People don't come back from being silent brothers either, and there he is.
Jem smiled at this, the sadness in his eyes receding.
Parapetai, Clary said again.
And in that moment, something settled over Simon. Something like a blanket on a cold day. Something completely reassuring.
Parapetai, he said.
A long moment settled between them, and in that moment, all was decided. There was no need to discuss it. You do not need to ask if your heart should beat, or if you should breathe. He and Clary were Parapetai. All of Simon's anger was gone. Now he knew. He had Clary, and she would have him, forever. Their souls knit.
How did you know? Simon asked.
It's not that hard to see, Magnus replied, and finally some of the usual levity was in his voice. I'm also literally magic.
It's pretty obvious, Katerina added.
Even I knew, said Jem. And I don't know you very well. There's always something about true Parapetai. They don't need to speak to communicate. I saw the two of you having entire conversations without saying a word. It was like that with my Parapetai, Will. I never had to ask Will what he was thinking. In fact,
It's usually better not to ask Will what he was thinking. That got a smile from Magnus and Katerina both. But I see it between you. True peripatae are linked long before the ceremony takes place.
So we can do the ceremony? Clary asked.
You can, Jem said. Not tonight. There will be some discussions in the Silent City about it, surely, as this is an unusual case.
All right, Katerina said. Now the nurse is taking over. That's enough for tonight. You two need sleep. That water packs a punch. You'll be fine in the morning, but you need to rest. Rest and hydrate. Come on.
Simon went to stand and found that his legs had left him and had been replaced with a wobbly leg-shaped substance. Katerina caught him up under the shoulder and helped him. Magnus helped Clary to her feet.
There's a room for you here tonight, Clary, Katerina said. In the morning, we'll have the dress gear brought to you both for Julian and Emma's ceremony.
Wait, Simon said as he was being ushered out.
Jace kept saying something about how I had to remember how he and I met. What does that mean?
That's for you to figure out, Jim said. The visions caused by Lake Lynn can stir very powerful feelings.
Simon nodded. His body was giving out. He allowed Katerina to help him back to his room.
What happened to you?
George said, as Katerina got him in the door.
How long have I been gone?
Simon replied, dropping face first onto his bed. It was a sign of his exhaustion that his terrible, sharp spring bed felt good. It felt like 100 down pillows heaped on the back of a bouncy castle.
Maybe 2 hours, George said. You look terrible. What was it?
The food, Simon mumbled. It finally got me.
And then he was asleep.
He felt surprisingly okay when he woke up. He woke up before George, even. He got out of bed quietly and picked up his towel and things to go down to the bathrooms. On the ground outside the door, in a black box, was a set of formal gear. Formal Shadow Hunter gear looked much like regular gear. It was just lighter in weight, somehow more deeply black, and cleaner than most gear. No tears. No ichor. Fancy duds. He put the box on his bed and quietly continued to the bathroom. No one was awake yet, so he had the whole moldy place to himself. It turned out if he woke up first, you could actually get a tiny bit of hot water. So he stood under the spray, pretended that it didn't taste of rust, and let his body relax in the warmth. There was just enough light coming through the window, high up on the wall, that he could get what amounted to an almost even shave. He walked through the empty halls of the academy, which were softened by the early morning light. Nothing looked so severe this morning. It was almost cozy. He even found one of the hall fires burning, and he stood beside it to get warm before going outside for some air. He wasn't surprised to find Clary there, already dressed, sitting on the top step, looking out at the mist that floated over the grounds at dawn.
You woke up early too, huh? She said.
He sat down next to her.
Yep. Get up before the kitchen starts cooking. That's the only way to escape it. I'm starving, though.
Clary rummaged around in her bag for a moment and produced a bagel wrapped in several small deli napkins.
Is that? Simon said. You think I would come from New York empty-handed? No cream cheese, but you know, it's something. I know what you need.
Simon held the bagel for a moment.
It makes sense, she said. You and me. I feel like it's always been true. It's always what we were. You don't... I know you don't remember it all, but it's always been you and me.
I remember enough, he said.
I feel enough.
He wanted to say more, but the enormity of it all, much of this was best left unsaid. For now, anyway. It was still so fresh in his mind, this feeling. This feeling of completeness. So he ate the bagel. Always eat the bagel.
Emma and Julian, Simon said between bites. They're only 14. Jace and Alec were 15. Still, it seems, I mean, they've been through a lot. The attack on the LA Institute.
I know,
Clary said, nodding.
But bad stuff, it brings people together sometimes. They've had to grow up fast.
A black horse-drawn carriage appeared on the edge of the road leading to the academy. As it grew closer, Simon could see a figure in a plain, parchment-coloured robe at the reins. When the carriage stopped and the figure turned to them, Simon could see the runes that sealed the man's mouth. When the man spoke, it was not through normal words, but in a voice that landed right inside of Simon's mind.
"I am Brother Shadrach. I'm here to take you to the ceremony. Please get inside."
"You know," said Simon quietly as they got into the carriage, "there was probably a time when we would have considered this creepy."
"I don't remember that time anymore," replied Clary.
"I guess we're finally even on something we don't remember." The carriage was simply appointed in black silk, black curtains, black everything, really. But it was well sprung and comfortable, as far as speeding horse carriages go. Brother Shadrach had no fear of speed, and soon the academy was in the distance, and Simon and Clary were looking at each other from across the carriage as they bounced along. Simon tried to talk a few times, but his voice juddered from the impact, the constant thud-thud-thud of the carriage making its way across Broslin Plain. The roads in Idris were not the smooth highways Simon was used to. They were paved in stone, and there were no rest stops with bathrooms and Starbucks. There was no heat, but each had been provided with a heavy fur blanket. As a vegetarian, Simon didn't really want to use it. As a person without much choice who was freezing, he did. Simon also had no watch, no phone, nothing to tell the passing time except the rising of the late autumn sun. He estimated that they rode an hour, maybe more. They entered the calming shade of the Broslin forest. The smell of the trees and leaves was almost intoxicating, and the sun came through in slashes and ribbons, illuminating Clary's face and hair, her smile. His Peribatai. They stopped not too far into the forest. The door opened, and Brother Shadrach was there.
"We have arrived."
Somehow, it was worse when it stopped. Simon's head and body still felt like they were shaking. Simon looked up and saw that they were near the base of a mountain. It stretched above the trees.
"This way."
They followed Brother Shadrach down a barely marked track, a light trail where several feet had passed, leaving just the tiniest scar on the ground, a few inches wide. Through a thicket of trees against the mountainside, there was a doorway, about 15 feet in height. It was wide at the base and narrow at the top. There was a bas-relief carving of an angel just above the lintel. Brother Shadrach took one of the rings on the door and knocked it hard, just once. The door opened, seemingly on its own accord. They walked down a narrow passage with smooth marble walls, and descended a staircase made of stone. There were no rails, so he and Clary put their hands on either wall to keep from falling. Brother Shadrach, in his long robe, had no such fear of falling. He seemed to glide down. From there, they were in a larger space, which Simon at first thought was made of stones. After a moment, he saw that the walls were mosaicked with bones, some chalky white, some grey, some ashy, and some a disturbing brownish colour. Long bones formed arches and columns, and skulls, topside out, formed most of the walls. They were finally left in a room where the bone art was really ambitious. Great circling patterns of skulls and bones gave the room shape. Above, smaller bones formed more delicate structures, such as chandeliers, which glowed with witch lights. It was like being shown the end of the world's worst home decorating show.
"You will wait here."
Brother Shadrach exited the chamber, and Simon and Clary were left alone. One thing about the Silent City, it really lived up to its name. Simon had never been anywhere so utterly devoid of sound. Simon worried that if he spoke, the walls of bones would come down on his head and bury them both. They probably wouldn't. That would be a major design flaw. But the sensation was strong. After several moments, the door opened again, and Julian appeared, alone. Julian Blackthorne may only have been 14, but he seemed older, even older than Simon. He was tall and serious, with his family's characteristic thick, curling, dark brown hair. His face had the look of quiet seriousness. It was a seriousness that reminded Simon of the way his mother had looked when his father died, and she'd spent nights awake, worrying about how to pay the mortgage and feed her children, how to raise them all by herself. The only sign he wasn't an adult was the way his dress gear fit a bit loose, and the way he was just a bit gangly.
Julian,
Clary said, looking as if she was considering hugging him and then discarding the idea. He seemed too dignified to be squeezed.
Where's Emma?
Talking to Brother Zachariah, Julian said. I mean, Jem. She's talking to Jem. Julian seemed deeply puzzled about this, but also didn't look to be in the mood to be questioned further.
So, Clary said, how do you feel?
Julian simply nodded and looked around. He hesitated.
I just want to do it. I want to get it done.
This seemed like a slightly odd response. Now that Simon was thinking about his own ceremony with Clary, the prospect seemed amazing. Something to be looked forward to. But Julian had been through a lot. He'd lost his parents, his older brother and sister. It was probably hard to go through something this major without them there. It was hard to look at Julian and not remember that he had seen Julian's brother Mark not that long ago. Mark, imprisoned and half mad. That he had decided not to share this fact with Julian, because it would have been unbelievably cruel to do so. Simon still believed his decision had been the right one, but that didn't mean it didn't weigh like a stone in his soul.
How's L.A.?
He said, and immediately regretted it.
How's L.A.? How's that place you live in when you saw your father murdered and your brother taken hostage forever by fairies? How's that?
Julian's mouth curled up at the corner, as if he sensed that Simon was feeling uncomfortable and felt sympathetic, but also thought it was funny. Simon was used to that.
Hot, Julian said, which was fair enough. How's your family?
Clary asked. Julian's face lit up, his eyes glowing like the surface of water.
Everyone is good. Ty's really into detective stuff. Drew's into horror, watching all sorts of mundane movies she's not supposed to. And then she scares herself and has to sleep with a witch light on. Livy's gotten really good with a saber, and Tavi?
He broke off as Jem and Emma came down the stairs. Emma's step seemed lighter. There was something about Emma that made Simon think of eternal summers on a beach. Her sun-bleached hair, her graceful way of moving, her winter tan. Along the inside of one of her arms was a vicious, long scar. She looked at once to Julian, who nodded before starting to pace around the room. Emma immediately wrapped Simon in a hug. Her arms, though smaller than his, wound around him like steel cables. She smelled like sea spray.
Thank you for being here, she said. I wanted to write to you, but they...
She looked at Jem for a moment.
They said they would tell you. Thank you, both of you.
Julian ran his hand along the smooth marble wall. He seemed to have trouble looking over at Emma. Emma went to him, and Jem followed, speaking to them both for a moment. Clary and Simon stood back and watched them. Something about the way Emma and Julian were acting wasn't quite what Simon expected. Sure, they would be nervous, but... No, it was something else. Clary tugged on Simon's sleeve, indicating that he should lean down so she could whisper to him.
They look so...
Clary broke off a sentence and cocked her head slightly to the side.
Young.
There was a hint in her voice that this was not a completely satisfactory statement. Something about this was off. But Simon had no time to figure out what. Jem, Emma, and Julian joined them again.
I will accompany you to the chamber, Jem said. Clary will walk with Emma. Simon will walk with Julian. Do you feel ready to continue?
Both Emma and Julian visibly swallowed hard and got very wide-eyed, but both managed to say yes.
Then we will proceed. Please, follow me.
More corridors. But the bone gave way to more white marble, and then marble that had the appearance of gold. They arrived at a great set of doors, which were opened by Brother Shadrach. The room they were led to was the largest yet, with a towering domed ceiling. There were marbles of all colors, white, black, pink, gold, silver. Every surface was utterly smooth. The room was occupied by a ring of silent brothers, maybe 20 in all, who parted to allow them in. The light in the room was dim and came from golden sconces and flickering candlelight. The air was thick with incense. Simon Lewis and Julian Blackthorne, Jem's voice resonated. For a moment, Simon almost thought he'd heard it inside his mind, the way he had once heard Brother Zachariah's. It still held a depth to it that seemed richer than human. "Cross to the other side of the circle, where they have made a space for you. When you get there, remain there. You will be told what to do." Simon looked to Julian, who had turned the color of copier paper. Despite looking like he might faint, Julian walked firmly across the room, and Simon followed. Clary and Emma took their places on the opposite side. Jem joined the circle of Silent Brothers, who all stepped back as one, widening the circle. Now the four of them were at the center. Suddenly, two rings of white and gold fire rose from the floor, the flames rising just a few inches, but burning bright and hot.
"Emma Carstairs, step forward."
The voices rang in Simon's head. It was all of the brothers speaking as one. Emma looked to Clary, then took a single step into one of the rings. She fixed her eyes on Julian and smiled widely.
"Julian Blackthorne, step forward."
Julian stepped into the other ring. His step was quicker, but he kept his head down.
"Witnesses, you will stand on the wings of the angel."
This took Simon a moment to work out. He finally saw that at the top of the circle, carved roughly into the floor, was another figure of an angel with outstretched wings. He took his place on one, and Clary the other. This brought him a little closer to the ring of fire. He felt the heat of it creep pleasantly over his cold feet. From this vantage point, he could see Emma and Julian's expressions. What was he seeing? It was something he knew.
"We begin the fiery trial. Emma Carstairs, Julian Blackthorne, enter the center ring. In this ring you will be bound."
A central ring appeared, joining the two. A Venn diagram of fire. As soon as Emma and Julian were in it, the center ring burned higher, reaching waist height. Something flickered between Julian and Emma at that moment. It was so quick that Simon couldn't tell which direction it had come from, but he'd seen it out of the corner of one of his eyes. Some look. Something about the way one of them stood. Something. But it was a look or a stance or something that he'd seen before. The fire flashed higher. It was up to their shoulders now.
"You will now recite the oath."
Emma and Julian began speaking as one. Their voices both with a small tremble as they recited the ancient biblical words.
"Whither thou goest, I will go."
Simon was hit with a bolt of anxiety. What had he just seen? Why was it so familiar? Why did it put him on edge? He studied Emma and Julian again as best as he could over the fire. They looked like two nervous kids about to do something very serious, or standing in a flaming circle. There it was again. So quick. The direction was obscured by the flickering at the top of the ring. What the hell was it? Maybe this was precisely what witnesses were supposed to do. Maybe they were supposed to watch for this kind of thing. No. Jem said it was a formality. A formality. Maybe he should have asked this question before standing next to the giant ring of fire.
"Where thou diest, I will die, and there will I be buried."
Shadowhunter rituals. Always cheery.
"The angel do so to me, and more also."
Julian tripped on the words, "do so to me." He cleared his throat and finished the statement a second after Emma. Something clicked in Simon's mind. He remembered Jace, suddenly, in his hallucination, saying something about the first time they'd met. And then the memory flashed across his mind like one of those banners trailing off the back of the little planes that flew above the beach off Long Island. He was sitting with Clary and Java Jones. They were watching Eric read poetry. Simon had decided this was the moment he was going to tell her. He had to tell her. He had gotten them both coffees, and the cups were hot. His fingers were burned. He had to blow on them, which was not a smooth move. He could feel the burning, the feeling that he had to speak. Eric was reading some poem that contained the words, "nefarious loins." "Nefarious loins, nefarious loins." The words danced in his head. He had to speak.
"There's something I want to talk to you about," he said.
Clary made some remark about his band name, and He had to get it back on point. It's about what we were talking about before, about me not having a girlfriend.
I don't know. Ask Jada Jones out. She's nice, and she likes you.
I don't want to ask Jada Jones out.
Why not? You don't like smart girls? Still seeking a rockin' bod?
Is she blind? How could she not see? What exactly did he have to do? He had to keep it together. Also, seeking a rocking bod. But the more he tried, the more oblivious she seemed. And then she became fixated on a green sofa. It was like that sofa contained everything in the world. Here he was, trying to declare his lifelong love. And Clary had fallen for the furniture. But it was more than that. Something was wrong.
What is it? He asked. What's wrong?
Clary, what's wrong?
I'll be right back, she said.
And with that, she put down the coffee and ran away. He watched her through the window, and somehow he knew that this moment was over. Forever. And then he saw. The ring of fire had extinguished. It was over. The oath was made, and Emma and Julian stood before them all. Julian had a rune on his collarbone, and Emma on her upper arm. Clary was tugging his arm. He looked over at her and blinked a few times.
Okay, her expression said.
His memory had chosen quite a moment to return. After the ceremony, they returned to Alicante, where they were taken to the Blackthorn Manor to change their clothes. Emma and Julian were taken by the staff to rooms on the main floor. Clary and Simon were led up the grand staircase.
I don't know what I'm supposed to change into, Simon said.
I didn't get a lot of advance notice.
I brought you a suit from home, Clary said. I borrowed it.
Not from Jace.
From Eric.
Eric has a suit? You promise it wasn't like his dead grandfather's?
I can't promise anything, but I do think it'll fit.
Simon was shown to a small, fussy bedroom on the second floor, overstuffed with furniture and crowded in by flocked wallpaper, and the penetrating stares of some long-deceased Blackthorns who'd taken up residence in the form of severe portraits. The suit bag was on the bed. Eric did have a suit. A plain black one. A shirt had also been provided, along with a silver blue tie and some dress shoes. The suit was an inch or too short. The shirt was too tight. Simon's daily training had made him into one of those people who burst through a dress shirt. The shoes didn't fit at all, so he wore the soft black shoes that were part of the formal gear. The tie fit fine. Ties were good for this. He sat on the bed for a moment and let himself think about all that had happened. He closed his eyes and fought the urge to sleep. He felt himself wobbling and dropping off when there was a soft knock at the door. He snorted as he came back from the microsleep.
Sure,
he said, which wasn't what he meant to say. Come in. Clary entered wearing a green dress that perfectly complemented her hair, her skin, every part of her. And Simon had a revelation. If he still felt romantic attraction toward Clary, seeing her at that moment might have caused him to start sweating and stammering. Now he saw someone he loved, who looked beautiful and was his friend. And that was all.
Listen, she said, shutting the door. Back at the ceremony, you look weird. If you don't want to do it, the peripatai thing, it was a shock, and I don't want you to be...
What? No. No. Instinctively, he reached for her hand. She squeezed it hard.
Okay, she said. But something happened in there. I saw it.
In the hallucination I had from the lake water, I saw Jace, and he kept telling me to remember how we met, he said. So I was trying to remember. And then right in the middle of the ceremony, I got the memory back. Just kind of downloaded. Clary frowned, a nose wrinkled in confusion.
The memory of how you met Jace? Wasn't it at the Institute?
Yes and no. The memory was really about us, you and me. We were in the coffee shop, Java Jones. You were naming all these girls I could date, and I was trying to tell you that you were the one I liked.
Yeah,
Clary said, looking down. And then you ran out, just like that.
Jace was there. You couldn't see him.
That's what I thought. Simon studied her face.
You ran out when I was telling you how I felt, which is okay. We were never meant to be like that.
I think that's what my subconscious in the annoying form of Jace wanted me to know. Because I think we're meant to be together. Parapetai can't like each other like that. That's why it's important for me to remember. I had to remember that I felt like that. I had to know it was different now. Not in a bad way. In the right way. Yes, Clary said. She had gotten a little teary-eyed. Not in a bad way. Simon nodded once. It was too big to reply to in words. It was everything. It was all the love he saw in Jem's eyes when he talked about Will, and the love in Alec's face when he looked at Jace, even when Jace was being annoying, and a clear memory he had of Jace holding Alec while he was wounded, and the desperation in Jace's eyes, that terror that comes only from thinking you might lose someone you can't live without. It was Emma and Julian, looking at each other. Someone was calling for them from downstairs. Clary brushed away a tear and got up and smoothed her already smooth dress.
This is like a wedding, she said. I feel like they're going to tell us we have to go pose for the photographer in a minute.
Clary hooked her arm through his. One thing, he said, remembering Maya and Jordan. Even when I'm a shadow hunter, I'm still going to be a little bit of a downworlder. I'm never going to turn my back on them. That's the kind of Nephilim I want to be.
I wouldn't have expected anything else, Clary said.
Downstairs, the two new Parapetai were examining each other from across the room. Emma stood to one side, wearing a brown dress covered in twine and gold flowers. Julian stood on the other, twitching inside his grey suit.
You look amazing,
Clary said to them both, and they looked down, shyly. Back into the carriage, this time to the Accords Hall. Jace was waiting for them on the front step, looking like Jace in a suit. Jace in a suit was unbearable. He gave Clary a look up and down.
That dress is...
He had to clear his throat. Simon enjoyed his discomfiture. Not much ever threw Jace, but Clary had always been able to throw him like a wiffle ball on a windy day. His eyes were practically cartoon hearts.
It's very nice, he said. So, how was the ceremony?
What did you think?
Definitely more fire than a bar mitzvah, Simon said.
More fire than a barbecue. I'm going to go with formal event with the most fire.
Jace nodded.
They were amazing, Clary said. And...
She looked to Simon.
We have news, she said.
Jace cocked his head in interest.
Later, she said, smiling. I think everyone is waiting for us to sit down.
Then we need to get Emma and Julian over here.
Emma and Julian were lurking in the corner of the room, heads close but with an awkward gap between their bodies.
I'm going to talk to them, Jace said, nodding at Julian and Emma. Give them a few words of manly, thoughtful advice.
As soon as Jace walked away, Clary started to speak, but they were immediately joined by Magnus and Alec. Magnus was about to start guest teaching at the academy, and they wanted to know how bad the food was. Julian's younger brothers and sisters, Ty, Livy, Drusilla, and Octavian, were clustered together around the table with the appetizers. Simon glanced over his shoulder and saw Jace unloading Jacely advice onto the new Parapetai. There was a delicious smell of roasting meat. Large platters of it were being placed on the tables now, along with vegetables and potatoes and breads and cheeses. The wine was being poured. It was time to celebrate. It was nice, Simon thought, in the midst of all the terrible things that could happen, and sometimes did happen. There was also this. There was a lot of love. As Simon turned back, he saw Julian hurrying out of the hall. Jace returned his arm around Emma's shoulders.
Everything okay? Clary asked.
Everything's fine. Julian needed air. This ceremony, it's intense. So many people. You need to eat.
This was to Emma, who smiled, but kept looking over at the door her Parapetai had gone through. Then she turned and saw Ty running across the hall with a tray containing an entire wheel of cheese.
Oh, she said, yeah, that's bad. He can actually eat that entire cheese, but then he'll throw up. I better get that or this'll end badly for Jules.
She ran after Ty.
They have a lot on their hands, Jace said, watching her go. Good thing they have each other. They always will. That's what Peripatai is about. He smiled across the room at Alec, who grinned back at him in a way that lit up his whole face.
About that Peripatai business, Clary said, we might as well tell you the news.
Born to Endless Night. Read by Keahu Kahuanui.
Every night and every morn, some to misery are born. Every morn and every night, some are born to sweet delight. Some are born to sweet delight. Some are born to endless night. Auguries of Innocence, William Blake. Magnus believed that many old things were creations of enduring beauty. The pyramids, Michelangelo's David, Versailles, Magnus himself. However, just because something was old and imbued with years of tradition did not make it a work of art. Not even if you were Nephilim and thought having the blood of the angel meant your stuff was better than anybody else's. Shadowhunter Academy was not a creation of enduring beauty. Shadowhunter Academy was a dump. Magnus did not enjoy the countryside in early spring, before winter had truly ended. The whole landscape was as monochrome as an old movie, without the narrative energy. Dark gray fields rolled under a pale gray sky, and trees were stripped down to gray claws clutching for the rain clouds. The academy matched its surroundings, squatting in the landscape like a great stone toad. Magnus had come to this place a few times long ago, visiting a friend. He had not liked it then. He remembered walking under the cold eyes of students who had been trained in the dark, narrow ways of Clave and Covenant, and who were too young to realize the world might be more complicated than that. At least back then, the place had not been falling down. Magnus stared at one of the slender towers that stood at each of the four corners of the academy. It was not standing up straight. In fact, it looked like a poor relation of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Magnus stared at it, concentrated, and snapped his fingers. The tower leaped back into place as if it were a crouching person who had suddenly straightened up. There was a faint series of cries issuing from the tower windows. Magnus had not realized there were people inside. This struck him as unsafe. Well, the inhabitants of the formerly Leaning Tower would soon realize he had done them a favor. Magnus eyed the angel in the stained glass window set above the door. The angel stared down at him, sword blazing and face censorious, as if he disapproved of Magnus's dress sense and was going to ask him to change. Magnus walked under the judgmental angel and into the stone hall, whistling softly. The hall was empty. It was still very early in the morning, which perhaps explained some of the grayness. Magnus hoped the day would brighten before Alec arrived. He had left his boyfriend in Alicante at his father's house. Alec's sister, Isabel, was staying there too. Magnus had slept uneasily at the Inquisitor's house last night, and said he would leave them to have breakfast alone, just the family. For years, he and Robert and Maris Lightwood had arranged their lives so that they never saw each other unless duty called or large cash payments for Magnus beckoned. Magnus was fairly sure Robert and Maris missed those days and wished they would come back. Magnus knew they would never have chosen him for their son, and even if their son had to date a man, they would have preferred not a downworlder, and certainly not a downworlder who had been around during the days of Valentine's Circle and seen them at a time in their lives they were not proud of now. For himself, Magnus did not forget. He might love one Shadowhunter, but it was impossible to love them all. He expected many more years politely avoiding and, when necessary, politely tolerating Alec's parents. It was a very small price to pay to be with Alec. Just now he had escaped Robert Lightwood and had a chance to inspect the rooms Magnus had requested the Academy prepare for them. From the state of the rest of the Academy, Magnus had dark forebodings about these rooms. He ran lightly up the stairs in that silent, echoing place. He knew where he was going. He had agreed to come and give a series of guest lectures at the request of his old friend Katerina Loss, but he was, after all, the High Warlock of Brooklyn, and he had certain standards. He had no intention of leaving his boyfriend for weeks. He had made it clear that he required a suite for himself and for Alec, and that the suite had to include a kitchen. He was not going to eat any of the meals Katerina had described in her letters. If possible, he intended to avoid even seeing any of the meals Katerina had described. The map Katerina had drawn him was accurate. He found the rooms at the top of the building. The connected attic rooms could, Magnus guessed, possibly count as a suite, and there was a little kitchen, though Magnus feared it had not been updated since the 1950s. There was a dead mouse in the sink. Maybe someone had left it there to welcome them. Maybe it was a festive gift. Magnus wandered through the rooms, waving a hand that encouraged the windows and countertops to wash themselves. He snapped his fingers and sent the dead mouse as a present to his cat, Chairman Meow. Maya Roberts, the leader of the New York Werewolf Pack, was cat-sitting for them. Magnus hoped that she would think Chairman Meow was a mighty hunter. Then he opened the little refrigerator. The heavy door fell off, until Magnus gave it a stern look and it hopped back on. Magnus looked inside the refrigerator, waved his free hand, and saw to his satisfaction that it was now filled with many items from Whole Foods. Alec would never have to know, and Magnus would send the money to Whole Foods later anyway. He swept through the rooms one more time, adding cushions to the bare, sad wooden chairs, and heaping their multicolored blankets from home onto the lopsided canopy bed. Emergency decorating mission accomplished, and feeling far more cheerful, Magnus descended into the main hall of the academy, hoping to find Katerina or see Alec coming. There was no sign of activity. So, despite his misgivings, Magnus went to check for Katerina in the dining hall. She was not there, but there were a few scattered Nephilim students having breakfast. Magnus supposed the poor creatures had gotten up early to throw javelins or some other unsavory business. There was a thin blonde girl heaping a gray substance that could have been porridge or eggs under a plate. Magnus watched with silent horror as she carried it toward a table, acting as if she actually intended to eat it. Then she noticed Magnus. "Oh, hello," said the blonde, stopping in her tracks as if she had been hit by a beautiful truck. He gave her his most charming smile. "Why not? Hello." Magnus had been around the block before blocks were invented. He was familiar with what this look meant. People had undressed him with their eyes before. He was impressed with the intensity of this particular look. It was rarer for people to rip off his clothes and send them flying to various corners of the room with their eyes. They were not even particularly exciting clothes. Magnus had decided to dress with quiet dignity as befitted an educator, and was wearing a black shirt and tailored pants. He was also, for that stylish educator touch, wearing a short robe over the shirt, but the glittering gold thread running through the robe was very subtle. "You must be Magnus Bane," the blonde said. "I've heard a lot about you from Simon." "I can't blame him for bragging," said Magnus. "We're so glad to have you here," continued the blonde. "I'm Julie. I'm practically Simon's best friend. I'm very cool with the Downworlders." "How nice for us Downworlders," Magnus murmured. "I'm very excited for your lectures, and to spend time together. You, me, and Simon." "Won't that be a party?" said Magnus. She was trying, at least, and not all Nephilim did. And she mentioned Simon every other breath, despite Simon being a mundane. Besides, the attention was flattering. Magnus turned the smile up another notch. "I look forward to getting to know you better, Julie." It was possible he misjudged the smile. Julie reached out a hand as if to take Magnus's and dropped her tray. She and Magnus looked down at the broken bowl and the sad, gray contents. "It's better this way," Magnus said with conviction. He gestured, and the whole mess vanished. Then he gestured to Julie's outstretched hand and a pot of blueberry yogurt with a small spoon appeared in it. "Oh," Julie exclaimed. "Oh, wow, thank you." "Well, since the alternative was going back and getting more of the academy food," said Magnus, "I think you owe me big. Possibly you owe me your firstborn. But don't worry, I'm not in the market for anybody's firstborn." Julie giggled. "Do you want to sit down?" "Thank you for the offer, but actually I was looking for someone." Magnus surveyed the room, which was slowly filling up. He still did not see Katerina, but at the door he saw Alec. with the air of someone newly arrived and talking to a mundane Indian boy who looked about 16. He caught Alec's eye and smiled. "There's my someone," he said. "Lovely to meet you, Julie." "Likewise, Magnus," she assured him. As Magnus approached Alec, the other boy shook Alec's hand. "I just wanted to say thanks," the boy said, and left with a nod to Magnus. "Do you know him?" Magnus asked. Alec looked mildly dazed. "No," he said, "but he knew all about me. We were talking about all the ways there are to be a shadow hunter, you know?" "Check you out," said Magnus, "my famous boyfriend, inspiration to the masses." Alec smiled, a little embarrassed, but mostly amused. "So, that girl was flirting with you." "Really?" Magnus asked. "How could you tell?" Alec gave him a skeptical look. "Well, it has been known to happen. I've been around for a long time," said Magnus. "I've also been gorgeous for a long time." "Is that so?" said Alec. "I'm in high demand. What are you going to do about it?" He could not and would not have teased Alec like this years ago. Alec had been new to love, stumbling through his own terror at who he was and how he felt. And Magnus had been as careful with him as he knew how to be, afraid to hurt Alec and afraid to shatter this feeling between them, new to Magnus as it was to Alec. It was a recent joy to be able to tease Alec and know he would not hurt him, to see Alec standing in a different way than he used to, easy and casual and confident in his own skin, with none of his parapetized swagger but with a quiet assurance all his own. The dimly lit stone dining room, the clatter of students eating and gossiping, faded away, nothing but background to Alec's smile. "This," said Alec. He reached out and tugged Magnus to him by the front of his robe, leaning back against the doorframe and drawing Magnus slowly in for a kiss. Alec's mouth was soft and sure, the kiss slow, his strong hands holding Magnus close, pressed along the warm line of his body. Behind Magnus's closed eyelids, the morning turned from gray to gold. Alec was here. Even a hell dimension, as Magnus recalled, had been greatly improved by Alec's presence. Shadowhunter Academy was going to be a snap. Simon came up late to breakfast and found Julie capable of talking about nothing but Magnus Bane. "Warlocks are sexy," she said in the tones of one who had had a revelation. "Miss Loss is our teacher, and I am trying to eat." Beatrice stared dispiritedly at her plate. "Vampires are gross and dead, werewolves are gross and hairy, and fairies are treacherous and would sleep with your mom," said Julie. "Warlocks are the sexy downworlders. Think about it, they all have daddy issues. And Magnus Bane is the sexiest of them all. He can be High Warlock of my pants." Magnus has a boyfriend," said Simon. There was a frightening glint in Julie's eye. "There are some mountains you still want to climb, even though there are no trespassing signs up." "I think that's gross," said Simon. "You know, the way you think vampires are?" Julie made a face at him. "You're so sensitive, Simon. Why must you always be so sensitive?" "You're so terrible, Julie," said Simon. "Why must you always be so terrible?" Alec had been with Magnus, Julie reported. Simon was thinking more about that than Julie's terribleness, which, after all, was not anything new. Alec was going to be staying at the academy for weeks. He usually saw Alec in crowds of people, and it had never seemed the right time to talk to him. It was the right time now. It was time to talk it out. The problem between them that Jace had hinted at so darkly. He didn't want there to be something wrong between him and Alec, who seemed like a good guy from what Simon could remember. Alec was Isabel's big brother, and Isabel was, he was almost certain, Simon's girlfriend. He wanted her to be. "Should we try to get a little archery practice in before class?" George asked. "That's jock talk, George," said Simon. "I've asked you not to do that, but sure." They all got up, pushing their bowls aside, and walked to the front doors of the academy, heading for the practice grounds. That was the plan, but none of them made it to the practice grounds that day. None of them made it past the threshold of the academy. They all stood on the front step in a horrified cluster. On the stone of the front step was a bundle wrapped in a fuzzy yellow blanket. Simon's eyes failed him in a way that had nothing to do with his glasses and everything to do with panic, refusing to register what was actually before him. "It's a bundle of junk," Simon told himself. Someone had left a parcel of garbage on their doorstep. Except the bundle was moving, in small, incremental movements. Simon watched the fretful stir beneath the blanket, looked at the gleaming eyes peering out from the cocoon of fuzzy yellows, and his mind accepted what he was seeing even as another shock came. A tiny fist emerged from the blankets, waving as if in protest at everything that was occurring. The fist was blue, the rich navy of the sea when it was deep and you were on a boat as evening fell. The blue of Captain America's suit. "It's a baby," Beatrice breathed. "It's a warlock baby." There was a note pinned to the baby's yellow blanket. Simon saw it at the precise moment that the wind caught it, snatching it off the blanket and whirling it away. Simon grabbed the paper out of the cold grip of the wind and looked at the writing, a hasty scribble on a torn scrap of paper. The note read, "Who could ever love it?" "Oh no, the baby's blue," said George. "What are we going to do?" He frowned as if he had not meant that to rhyme. Then he knelt down because George was the not-so-secret sweetheart of the group, and awkwardly took the yellow-wrapped bundle in his arms. He stood up, his face ashen, holding the baby. "What are we going to do?" Beatrice warbled, echoing George. "What are we going to do?" Julie was plastered up against the door. Simon had personally seen her cut off a very large demon's head with a very small knife, but she appeared as if she would expire with terror if someone asked her to hold the baby. "I know what to do," said Simon. He would go find Magnus, he thought. He knew Magnus and Alec had arrived and were awake. He needed to talk to Alec anyway. Magnus had fixed Simon's demon amnesia. Magnus had been around for centuries. He was the most adult that Simon knew. A warlock baby abandoned in this fortress of shadowhunters was a problem Simon had no idea how to fix, and he felt he needed an adult. Simon was already turning to go. "Should I give the baby mouth to mouth?" George asked. Simon froze. "No, don't do that. The baby is breathing. The baby's breathing, right?" They all stood and stared at the little bundle. The baby waved his fist again. If the baby was moving, Simon thought, the baby must be breathing. He was not even going to think about zombie babies at this time. "Should I get the baby a hot water bottle?" George said. Simon took a deep breath. "George, don't lose your head," he said. "This baby is not blue because he is cold or because he cannot breathe. Mundane babies are not blue in this way. This baby is blue because he is a warlock, just like Katerina." "Not just like Ms. Loss," Beatrice said in a high voice. "Miss Loss is more of a sky blue, whereas this baby is more of a navy blue." "You seem very knowledgeable," George decided. "You should hold the baby." "No," Beatrice squawked. She and Julie both threw up their hands in surrender. As far as they were concerned, it was clear George was holding a loaded baby and should not do anything rash. "Everybody, stay where you are," said Simon, trying to keep his voice calm. Julie perked up. "Ooh, Simon," she said. "Good idea." Simon fled across the hall and up the stairs, moving at a pace that would have amazed his evil Shadowhunter gym teacher. Scarsberry had never provided him with motivation like this. He knew that Magnus and Alec had been put in a fancy suite up in the attics. Apparently there was even a separate kitchen. Simon just kept heading up, knowing he would hit the attics at some point. He reached the attics, heard murmuring and movement behind the door, and flung the door wide open. Then he stood, arrested on his second threshold of the day. There was a sheet over Alec and Magnus, but Simon could see enough. He could see Alec's white, rune-scarred shoulders and Magnus's wild black hair spread on the pillow. He could see Alec freeze, then turn his head and give Simon a look of absolute horror. Magnus's golden cat eyes gleamed from over Alec's pale shoulder. He sounded almost amused as he asked, "Can we help you?" "Oh my god," Simon said. Oh wow, I am really sorry." "Please leave," said Alec in a tight, controlled voice. "Right," said Simon. "Of course." He paused. "I can't leave." "Believe me," said Alec, "you can't."
There's an abandoned baby on the front steps of the academy, and I think it's a warlock,
Simon blurted out. Why do you think the baby is a warlock?